Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's a guy who does not drink a lot of liquids late at night for fear of wetting the board. I'm Rob Cisternino. Hello, everybody. This is so stupid. And welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. Very excited to be bringing you our interview recap podcast here today with Denise Stapley, winner of Survivor Philippines. And she's one of my favorite people to have on the podcast because she has such amazing insight into both the game and to people in general as a therapist. So lots of good stuff on the way coming from Denise. I know I always hear from people that we need to have Denise on the podcast. So I'm always excited when we can actually get her here for that. It's been a busy 24 hours for me since I first watched the Survivor episode. Of course, Survivor Know-It-Alls last night reunited with Stephen Fishback. Then this morning, I was out of the house really early. Like, I actually had a real job today, and I had to drive down to go to the CBS Interactive offices where I hosted their Behind the Buff show. I filled in for Bryce Sander, the regular host of that, who was away this week. And so I was hosting sort of a roundtable, sort of like panel show. And they had, of course, Sandra via Skype, but also Cochran was there. And also Joshua Morrow from The Bold and the Beautiful was there. And that was a very fun experience. I actually did my exit interview with Sandra from my laptop while I was there. Somehow Sandra thinks I've been saying bad things about her, according to the exit interview. Still, I thought it was a good interview. You could check the exit interview out at robisthewebsite.com. And if you wanted to see the Behind the Buff show that we did, that's on the CBS Facebook page. And I think they also put it onto the CBS Survivor YouTube page as well, if you want to give that a shot. And of course, I've got my feedback show coming up with Jessica Leese later on. So if you want to make sure you don't miss any of that, subscribe to the podcast, robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. And then we also appreciate your feedback and your star ratings, of course. Before we get to my interview with Denise, let me take a moment and thank today's sponsor for the podcast. And those are our friends over at Movement Watches, MVMT, pronounced Movement. They are a watchmaking company that decided, hey, you want a great looking watch and you don't want to spend a lot of money? Well, they have the answer for you. They started Movement Watches. It was two broke college kids who wanted to wear a stylish watch but didn't want to pay a lot of money. So they started up their own company and they built it up from there. Movement Watches start at just $95. At a department store, you could be looking at $400 to a $500 purchase for a watch like this. I actually wore my Movement Watch today when I went to CBS. And it's actually waterproof. Luckily, I was not submerged in water at any point, but if I was, I would have been covered. Movement figured out that by selling watches online, they were able to cut out the middleman and the retail markup, providing the best possible price with classic design, quality construction, and stylized minimalism. Over 1 million Movement watches have been sold in over 160 different countries. So get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to movementwatches.com/RHAP. Even my wife, Nicole, who doesn't compliment anything that I have or wear, she even says this is a nice watch. It's time to step up your watch game. Be a game changer in terms of your timepiece. Go to movementwatches.com/RHAP to join the movement. That's MVMTwatches.com/RHAP. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to bring this guest back onto the podcast. It's been a minute since we last had her on. It was actually also during an All-Star season when we last talked during Survivor Cambodia, and I'm always clamoring to get her back on because she has so much insight, including being a winner, plus everything she knows about the human condition. Please welcome back Denise Stapley.
Hey, Rob, how are you doing?
The winner of Survivor Philippines. Yes, I need to get that in there. Denise, and I'm so excited to finally have you back on. I've been chasing you now for seasons to come back.
I know. You know, just living the dream here in Iowa, you know, it just gets so crazy busy. You know, I haven't been able to get back on, you know, between hormonal daughter and work. And so this is exciting to get back on here. But, you know, like I was telling you, I'm a little bit nervous because this is kind of a crazy season. So I've literally been drawing out diagrams and trying to get my thoughts in order so I can hopefully be coherent. throughout most of this.
Yes. And the other reason I love to talk to you is because you actually listen to the podcast as well.
I do. I literally have avoided today listening to the Know-It-Alls because I don't want to be tainted, you know, or have kind of my perceptions or what I might say impacted by it. And it's been really painful because I literally load up my little shuffle every morning after Survivor, and I get, you know, I get the Know-It-Alls on there, and then I get the recap, and I get the exit interviews, and, you know, this last week I'm feeling extra pressure because I listened to the Survivor voicemail with Randy, and I hear he loves winners. And so I'm feeling especially comfortable coming back on, combined with the fact that
it's not your birthday, is it, Denise?
It is not. Thank God it's not my birthday. all of that combined with the fact that I believed that Boston Rob was the one coming back because I read his tweet.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit of a dumbass sometimes. So I'm feeling a little bit of pressure. But, you know, we're going to have fun. And I will do my best.
Yeah. Well, if people don't know what you're referring to, over the weekend on Saturday, there was a tweet that came from Boston Rob, who did tweet out that he had an announcement to make. He wanted to tell everybody,
okay, officially got the okay to let you all know, yes, I will be returning to Survivor CBS this week. Be sure to tune in to CBS this Wednesday. And it got retweeted 322 times and everybody's favoriting it.
But that jokester, it was an April Fool's tweet, which then he admitted to last night that he got everybody with that.
Yeah, which I read this morning and went, oh,
yeah.
So I did.
And it's ironic.
I was one of the ones that fell for it.
Denise,
yeah.
Because when Boston Rob, I think, first joined Twitter, I'm pretty sure it was on April 1st, maybe it was 2011, and Jeff Probst tweeted out like, hey, everybody, Boston Rob joined Twitter. And I had tweeted out, yeah, right, Boston Rob wouldn't be caught dead on Twitter. April Fools,
funny.
I got it. And then Boston Rob replied,
hey, Sister Nino. Smarten up. I am on Twitter and I'm not dead.
That's awesome. Oh. So see, we've both been kind of taken by him. So, oh my gosh, that is funny.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's get into talking about this. Actually, first, everything's good on your end, Denise? Anything else you want to update us on?
No, everything's good. I'm still working. We're just getting ready for the end of the school year. It's going to be here before we know it. So we're trying to get summer plans scheduled out. And that's making life a little crazy. But no, again, life is pretty, you know, pretty simple around here, and I actually kind of like it that way. So it's all good.
All right, Denise, I have to start off with asking you about your buddy Malcolm and the circumstances which happened to him now 2 weeks ago in this combined tribal council. How devastated were you to see that happen to Malcolm?
It was horrible. I'm still mourning a little bit. You know, people think like that. You know, a lot of people may think that I knew or, you know, that I read spoilers and that I know what's going to happen. But I literally didn't know when or how far he was going in the season. And I'd seen him back in October. We'd gone down to Dallas to do a Tough Mudder where my husband actually blew out his knee and had talked to him a little bit down there. But he knows, Malcolm knows, I don't want to know. I want my head as far in the sand as it possibly can be. And so I thought, oh, he's doing good. And then, you know, luck of the draw, you know, and that's what happens, you know, no fault of his own. There he went. And it just sucks. I just feel for him, but I think he'll be back. But I feel for him.
Did you reach out to him after you watched it? And if so, what did you say?
I did. It was probably the same as about 1,000 other texts that he got, which was just a no with about 1,000 O's after it. Just like, no. And then we just texted back and forth a little bit that night because he's off. I think he was in Columbia at the time when I was texting with him. But just a little brief interaction and just kind of a, hey, I owe you a beer. And, you know, hopefully we were going to try and catch up and FaceTime and just kind of hear a little bit more about it. And we've just not quite connected. So we just every once in a while do a little tweeting or not tweeting, but texting back and forth. And yeah, so I just sent him my condolences, so, and drank a beer for him.
Yeah. What did you think about the game that he was playing up until that point? Did you feel like that he was on the right track?
I do, because I think he was able, you know, I think, you know, he is such a confident guy. I mean, he just is. That's who he is. In the game, that's who he is. Out of the game. And I think he had been, because I think he'd also, he hadn't come out so strong. I think he knew I have to kind of tone it down a little bit. But he was making some good alliances. He was making some good connections. I think he was in a good place. There were enough other, you know, when we think of past seasons, it seemed like there were enough other alpha males or just big personalities out there that could kind of shield him for a while. And so I was really hopeful. I mean, I want nothing more, truly, you know, than to see him make it all the way to the end.
And you feel like that he definitely would want to play again?
Yeah, I think if you let him, you know, let the sting kind of settle down, I do. I think he is just so much of a competitor. I don't think, you know, it's like to lose a game. I don't think he can leave that unresolved. You know, so I think given the right opportunity, I do. I think he'd go back. You know, I think, you know, you just have to ask him and let a little bit of time pass. And so hopefully, you know, I don't know. But, you know, because that would be time number four. And you never know. I mean, hey. Boston Rob, right? Was that four?
Four times for Boston
four
Rob.
Times.
Hey, smart enough, Denise.
Hey.
Yeah.
So he could be the next, not the next Boston Rob, but he could be the next four-time winner.
Is the book out on Malcolm, though? Does everybody know how good he is? And because of that, people will never let him get close to the end again?
I don't know. Didn't they know that about Rob, though, too?
But that first-time players. I mean, that was sort of like a special circumstance.
True. That's true. I think it really depends on the mix of people that are out there. You know, if it's returning players again, you know, it could be the same outcome because so much of it's not just strategy. You know, it's that, you know, that bit of luck and it's timing of things and it's you're adapting, you know, how you're adapting to it. So I don't know. You know, Sander made it through twice.
Yeah.
But again, I suppose, you know, people could say, well, we didn't really understand how she won the first time, which I think it's pretty clear, even just seeing her play this season, you know, you get a better picture of how she got through to the end twice. So I don't know. I don't know.
All right. Well, let's talk about Sandra. And of course, she goes out of the game last night. Were you a Sandra fan, Denise, as Sandra is the mayor of the winners?
I am, actually. I am a huge Sandra fan. And I think, you know, some people love her or you hate her. I am definitely on the Sandra train. So, she's just good. She's really, really good. And, you know, last night, I think Sarah said it best. Like she, you know, she talked about how she grooms people and, you know, she's calm and, you know, she doesn't really put any pressure on and she sucks you in. You know, I think in my mind, I think, you know, she has this ability to kind of charm and disarm you and she knows how to adapt to what she needs to do, you know, so she can come on strong and kind of take control in certain moments. But clearly after that swap, you could see her shift kind of how she interacted, and she kind of quieted down. She took a step back. She wasn't as kind of, there wasn't as much bravado. And I honestly thought she was going to get through that tribal council. I thought there was a really good chance that Ty was going to go home instead.
It's so interesting to watch how she did shift the game. And it's sort of like tattooed in my brain because I watched the clip so many times today because it was part of the Survivor Facebook page show that I did with Cochran and with Sandra. But they showed her when she was trying to make that pitch to Ozzy and to Sarah and to Andrea. And she just got like really soft with what she was saying with them. She's like, okay, let me tell you guys what's going to happen. There's those three. They're coming for you. And I noticed something for the first time that, and I do it because it's sort of like when I do Boston Rob, I go into that, hey, you know, like there's to me, Denise, and maybe there's something like there's like some sort of response to this, but it feels like that is the effective sort of like register that you go with your voice. Like you get soft, you get low, and it seems like it's very convincing for the other players. Now, it didn't work out for Sandra last night, but it seemed like that they were at least contemplating it. Is there anything to that in terms of the tone of speaking when you're trying to sell people on these things?
Well, I do, because you think of it, it's like in therapy. You know, it's, you know, when you really want someone to just kind of, when you need them to just kind of calm down and settle down, you have to. You kind of have to pace yourself with them. you know, or like a parent. Like, I think, you know, if you want your kid to hear you, you don't rise, like you don't escalate, you know, your voice. They're never going to hear you. They'll actually tune you out. And so by kind of softening that, she seems less aggressive. She seems like less of a threat. And, you know, and you even think of how she words things then with that tone. It's all about how it's better for them. She never puts herself into that equation. She never talks about how this is about her or how this is good for her game. It's like she becomes kind of this protective mother in a way, like in that tone. I mean, it's interesting, but you're right. Like, she just softens it and hey, it's going to be okay. And it's very soothing. So absolutely, it works.
Yeah, I was just really impressed with everything that she did last night. I really thought that she was going to come out of it. Did you think that they were going to buy into that, Denise, or did you think there was no chance?
No, I did. For a moment, you know, I thought they're listening because you could see them. You know, sometimes you can watch and you think people are, you know, they're trying to make it look like they're listening, but you know, they're tuning them out. They're, you know, it's, you know, they're just giving them kind of lip service, but they were all, I think, really taking it in, and you could hear, I think it was Ozzy and Sarah talking about, you know, she has a point, you know, so they were listening, you know, she has a point about that threat of those remaining Kerrang players. But, you know, so I thought maybe, and then with the way that Ty had been playing and with the way that things came out at Tribal Council, I really did. I genuinely thought they might buy into that and she might have this opportunity to stay.
Denise, did you ever incorporate anything from Sandra's games into your game in the Philippines?
I would love to be able to say that I could or I did, but no. You know, I think because part of it is, you know, if you, or at least for me, I, you know, there are players that I watch that I go, oh my gosh, I would love to be able to do that or to play that way. But you go out there and you just become who you are in everyday life, you know, for the most part. And my brain doesn't think the way that her brain thinks. I wish it did. Like, just the way that she could think, like, about the sugar. Oh, my gosh, that never would have crossed my mind. Not even a chance, you know, or, you know, in past seasons with socks or fish or I think Varner had been talking about, I don't know if it was fish or chicken at one point that maybe she had done something with when she was playing with them. I mean, she just has this way of manipulating circumstances and situations, and it's not a bad thing. I mean, it's just this innate ability to do it. So I think if I try, I'll screw up my own game.
Now, you were in a somewhat similar position to what Sandra was going through after. It wasn't so much a tribe swap, but you got sent to Calabar. I always have to say it like Penner, Calabar.
Yep.
And
exactly.
You were really outnumbered, and you were in a situation where you ended up having to go to a couple of tribal councils with them. Were there any things that you were actively doing that you to try to get them to not go after you, but go after one of their own?
Absolutely. You know, the minute I got to Calabar, it was raining. So I literally, we sat in the shelter and I, for the most part, just sat quietly, literally in the back row. Like, there were kind of like two rows of us sitting in the shelter and I just sat. And so the first thing I actively did was just sit, start taking in, start paying attention to, you know, what's being said, who's sitting by who seems to be connecting. And you could see a pretty clear divide already at Calabar, you know, the guys versus the girls in terms of connection. You know, Carter and Jeff and Penner were definitely, you know, clearly connected, and the girls, you know, clearly were connected. So there was already kind of this feeling of a split alliance. But then, you know, just to make sure I didn't get booted out, I did what you know, it's kind of like, again, you bring in who you are outside of the game into the game. And one of the things I know how to do is just work. And so I literally, it would be raining and the girls wouldn't want to get out of the shelter. And so I'd say, I'll go get water and I'll go run out in the rain. And there was a little, almost like we'd created, like there was a spigot that came off the tree to fill up water bottles, or, you know, helping, you know, just helping around camp when we could get out of the shelter. Going to get water with Jeff, you know, you're just consciously trying to find opportunities to kind of make those connections. So that's really what I did, was just really, you know, paying attention, looking for opportunities, definitely in terms of trying to perform in challenges to show that I had a stronger, maybe a stronger presence than the girls that were there. You know, Katie was not eating a lot by the time I got there. Dana was already feeling sick, and Sarah is just fantastically herself, kind of unique self. So I was just trying to find my way to, you know, kind of make me look like a better keep than one of the other girls.
Right. And that's a challenge for Sandra to try to really show off her performance in the challenges. You know, that's always something that's one of the flaws in her game, where if you're looking at her just in terms of sheer challenge performance, in terms of from a physical standpoint, she's very good at puzzles, but that's going to be a liability for her, where it's actually one of your strengths in the game and a reason why people would want to keep you around in that same exact spot. Do you think that Sandra can win again under any circumstances?
This of all seasons, I thought this could have been a season that it might have happened in. You know, I think anything is possible. Honestly, I do. Just because of luck in the game, people can forget, you know, it just, again, depends on what people are paying attention to. I do think if she came back again, she might have to tone down just a little bit. I love her for it, but maybe just a little bit of the queen stays queen kind of bravado, because you don't want to remind them of that too much. You know,
yeah.
But at the same time, you know, and the one, you know, that may have helped her to some extent. But, you know, people thinking, well, she'll be a bigger target and I'll use her as a little bit of a shield. But I don't know. I do. Maybe I'm a eternal optimist, but, you know, I do. I think she could.
Denise, do you ever let your mind wander to what an all winter season would look like?
I do. I dream about it sometimes. I mean, I, you know, people talk about, you know, days going by when they think about the game. Even, you know, with seasons like this, especially, you start thinking about what that would be like out there.
And in that dream, do you think you would work with Sandra?
Oh, I'd work with her in a heartbeat. But you know what? I'd probably say that about anyone, especially now, especially if there are other people listening. You know, you also don't want to give away your entire strategy, but I believe you have to be really open. You know, going out into another season, you have to be able to look at, you know, why you would align with someone, what the benefit would be. You know, and Sandra's somebody that seemed to be able to adapt with kind of the craziness of this season. You know, she adapted really well. We saw in the swaps, you know, she adapted well. Just thinking of this season in particular, I don't think I would have fared very well out there.
Why do you say that?
There's so much, you know, somebody on my own Facebook page wrote it, and I think, or either wrote it or it sent a message, and I thought, oh my gosh, that's perfect. That's the perfect analogy. They compared this season to a game of Calvin Ball. Do you know what Calvin Ball is?
Is that Calvin and Hobbes?
It is. And it's basically this imaginary game that he created and invents, and basically the rules always change. And the only rule is that you can't use the same rule twice, but that's a rule that you can't have. I mean, so basically you can't count on anything. There's nothing that you can clearly anticipate. And for me, you know, I'm someone who's kind of a creature of habit, and there's some core things about Survivor that I really like, and I like being able to expect those. And, you know, hence why I have, like, charts of, like, wait, who was on what original tribe, and where was their original tribe? There's just so much to keep track of. It gets a little overwhelming. And so I think if I was out there, I would have to really just try and keep myself, you know, focused on, okay, just where am I at right now? And what do I need to adapt to right now without trying to anticipate what's coming next? Because clearly, as last week, you know, as yesterday showed, who knows what's coming next?
Well, I think the biggest problem for you would be just that you would be different than anybody else that would still be in the game, in that you are a winner. And I think that that would separate you and make you sort of like an easy target for people as we move forward, where there's only one person left here who's won the game, and that's
exactly.
Denise. We need to get rid of her. But I think in a situation where there were other winners around and potentially in the all winner season, you know, again, I don't want to put any sort of like a jinx or any sort of bad mojo on you, but I think you do very well, Denise. I might have to make you a winner pick again.
Oh my gosh, that'd be fantastic. I would, you know, no matter what, I would love the opportunity, you know, so if it ever happens, you know, I definitely, you know, because again, even if you're out first, it's a different experience and it's a different opportunity. I mean, none of us go out there with the idea of losing in mind. I mean, we go out there to try and win, but it would be fun to try it again, and it would be fun to see if the circumstances could be different. You know, I'd love to have the opportunity to not just always be working from the bottom. Mm-hmm. That would be great. But who knows? I could go back out there in all winter season, and it could be exactly the same.
Yeah. Well, Denise, I went back out there a second time, and I got voted out day 12, and it was so hard to be out of the game for that long. I just wanted to go home. But now I'm married. I have two kids. And getting voted out first, I think that I might enjoy 36 days by myself.
You would probably to a certain extent. You're going to miss your family.
Oh, Ponderosa, great.
Yeah.
What are we eating? Pancakes?
Yeah. You're going to miss Nicole. You're going to miss the boys. But because at this point in your life, you will never get that opportunity again to go have that quiet time for any extended period of time.
Yeah.
So it does become a little bit of a treat, like, oh my gosh, even if you are exiled, like I was thinking, like before we knew what Exile Island was, I'm like, you know what? I'm okay with exile. Like sometimes I just, you know, I have a daughter that sings in the shower. She sings in the morning. She sings in the car, and it's not always good. And so sometimes I just like quiet. And so sometimes being on Exile Island would be like, okay, this is kind of pleasant.
Yeah, especially if it was this Exile Island.
Oh, my gosh. I'd take that in a heartbeat. That was amazing.
Yeah. That's interesting. In terms of parents going on Survivor and then it's a vacation. All right.
It's a little different perspective. Yeah.
I want to ask you about a quote from last night that was given by Sarah Lucina, who said, "The reason Sandra won twice is that she doesn't come off as the most dangerous person in the game. I almost feel like the way Sandra talks to people is that she's almost grooming us. She doesn't pressure you. Her voice never raises. It's calm, and she starts to suck you in." I thought that that was a very poignant analysis of Sandra. Now, I think this is a little known fact that you are very friendly with the Sarah Lucina. Is that true or false?
I am. That is true. Well, I don't know how you say how friendly, but she is a hometown gal, and I've gotten to run into her a couple of times. We've not gotten to connect a ton, but I am definitely hoping, you know, that she continues to do well. So I know a little bit about Sarah. So to hear that from her, she's spot on. Absolutely spot on.
Okay. So did you talk to her at all before she went out there? Because she's a very interesting player in this game, and she's somebody much like yourself, something else you have in common. I picked her to win Survivor Kagiyan. She did not make me look as smart as you did way back when, but I did see something about her. And what I saw in her was that I said, boy, she's very perceptive. She's able to look at Tony and say, I can tell he's a cop. She never talked to him. She could just look at him and say, okay, you're a police officer. Now, again, her game ended up spiraling out of control back in Kagiyan, but she does seem to have kept that sense of being able to size a person up.
Absolutely. And if you see her, you know, not only that quote, you know, one, she's someone who's gone back out there and has consciously thought, I need to adapt my game and I need to try to play differently. Yet at the same time, she can't separate out who she is and even the role she plays in real life as a cop. You know, even last night, I don't know if you know, like when she was sitting next to Ty, and she kind of looks down and kind of she's, you know, rubbing her hands. She's like, I don't know, Ty. You know, the only thing I could think of was, oh, my gosh, she is playing the good cop right now. She is the good cop saying, basically, come on, confess. Give me something to work with here. I mean, she's just, again, there's a very natural ability for her to do that, you know, I think she's doing well this season. You know, she made that decision to go connect with Troyzan before the swap happened, which I think is hugely, you know, hopefully going to be in her favor long term, if depending on how that plays out or if she can get reconnected with him, just because she gave herself another opportunity, you know, she gave herself another option maybe. But I know you asked if I had talked with her before she went out. I didn't. Again, you know, I think at one point I said I heard I might have, you know, messaged her, you know, again and just said, you know, hey, good luck. I don't know how the season plays out. But again, I'm pretty upfront with most people. They know I just don't want to know. So I didn't give her any advice going out. I didn't know she was even in the mix until I kind of, you know, heard some sprinklings of things that, you know, were unavoidable. And I thought, okay, if Tony's out there, you know, my guess is it's got to be Sarah. So I had an inkling that she was back out there. But now I'm like an ostrich. I just stick my head in the sand and I keep it there until the season starts.
What about Malcolm? You didn't give him any sort of advice or pointers, or did he want to pick your brain before he left?
No way. No. And he, you know, he is so smart. He is so much more strategic than I am. I mean, so I'm sure he, you know, one, I didn't know he had, you know, I didn't talk with him again before he went out there. And, you know, I think he, I'm sure, had his own vision of his game in his head. And, you know, I think some people might find that helpful, kind of, you know, what do you want to do going back in? But, you know, I think he's played great for the most part. You know, like, he's played some really solid games. You know, clearly, you know, in the Philippines, you know, luck of the draw that our rules weren't flipped and I wasn't on that jury and he wasn't in that final tribal council. So I don't think he needed much advice from me, to be honest.
I'm surprised, because I think if I was going to go back, Denise, I think I would call everybody and I would say, but do you have any tips for me? Do you have anything that I could use?
Do you think really, like, because I think of that and I think, okay, so because Malcolm could even tell me, like, let's say I did that. We play that out and I call Malcolm and I say, okay, hey, dude, what am I supposed to do out there? You know, and he might say, you know, you gotta come out stronger. I don't know what he would say, or be, you know, you have to be more strategic or more willing to, you know, well, say it in the generic, you know, make big moves. You know, the fact of the matter is I'm still going to go out there and I'm still going to end up being who I am. And all of that advice then in my own mind just makes me more nervous.
Right. It's hard to filter that feedback.
Yeah. Yeah. Because then I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm screwing up. Or it's, you know, it's like I go back to my graduate training for therapy. You know, we would have therapy sessions with students from the university. And on the other side of it, you know, there's a two-way mirror. You know, you have your practicum instructor and other students, and then you go back there and they, you know, you would take breaks and they'd give you this feedback and then you have to go back in the room. And I hated every minute of it. I loved watching it, but I didn't, but that feedback just, I would try and do too much, or I would, you know, and until you figure out kind of what your own game is or what my own style was, it was just kind of actually overwhelming.
Yeah. I think I'd just be hoping that somebody would say, actually, you know what I heard? Watch out for Carter. Yeah, I heard he's coming for you.
Yeah. But then what if you're wrong? Like, you know, so then you start doubting, well, what if you're wrong? Like, somebody could say, well, Abby's going to, you know, like me and Abby. Like, let's say Abby and I are back out there. You know, I could go out there and be completely paranoid and think, okay, well, maybe we've just been making nice on the surface and she's just been waiting, you know, to enact her revenge. You know, when we get back out on the island, for me being mean to her, you know, then you start again altering your game, and you already have these preconceived notions which you can't avoid, but I think it just adds so much to it. I don't know. I think it's hard. It's like going back to Survivor a second time. I think it's harder than the first time, just the thought of it, because now I know what to expect at least to some degree, and before I was clueless. Like I thought, all right, how bad can it be? Well, it can be really bad. And now we know that.
All right. Let me ask you about Debbie, because this is where I want to really get into your specialty and your field. I need somebody to help me understand what is going on with Debbie, because she seemingly snapped last week. She's going off and yelling at Brad Culpepper about how she should be the one who's doing, you know, all the balancing and the challenges, yet she seems to be unable to balance in the challenge. Then this week, she's almost, you know, a complete 180 with Cochran. Can you give us your armchair version of what's going on with Debbie?
I honestly don't fully know. I have a couple of thoughts. You know, like you said, we just saw her just have this breakdown last week that was just, you know, I thought this is like watching a kid have this tantrum that they just can't stop. You know, this is like when my daughter and I have gotten into a conflict and she just can't shut her mouth. Like she just has to say one more thing or one more thing. It's like, oh, girl, give it. Like you got to give it a rest. And so there's something that just kind of came unhinged. And, you know, and I don't know what else we're not seeing, if there's something else. But, you know, for her, you know, I know she comes off on the one hand as this, you know, incredibly overconfident, I think, you know, Cochran referred to this, you know, this overconfidence. But I go back and forth between, is it really overconfidence or is it overcompensating? You know, like there, it's two very different things. It's like from a therapy standpoint, you know, you have, we're all a little narcissistic. But so if you're thinking of someone who's a narcissist, you can have a narcissist. I've had the narcissist in my office who really does think they're all that. And they think I'm a piece of crap and I know nothing. And I'm probably an idiot therapist and they're the only one who, you know, they're incredibly superior to me and they believe that. But then I've also had the narcissist in my office who's really, when you start peeling back the layers, there's this really deep insecurity. And there are pockets, and so I go back and forth with her. You know, there are moments when I think, you know, when you see her breakdown with Cochran, I feel like it's more of the, you know, the overwhelmed kind of insecurity, how do I fit? But I don't know. It's definitely been interesting to watch her.
Just going back to her previous seasons and then all of these jobs and nobody really knows like what's real and what's not, do you get the sense that she's putting on a front for everybody or do you feel like there's some sort of authenticity and maybe she's just misunderstood?
I think it's both. I think, you know, I don't doubt that she's done all of those things, you know, or had those experiences. But her need, it's that need to let everybody know that makes me curious. You know, it's that need of, okay, is this just, I need to impress to connect. But I think what's lacking for her, and I may have just gotten off track on the question that you asked, but is this lack of awareness. Like, I think Debbie just has some really big blinders, unfortunately, on about how she impacts others or how she comes across. And, you know, Cochran, it was really interesting, you know, watching her on Exile and to see Cochran come on. I'm like, oh, if he ever wants to stop writing, I think he could make a really great therapist because mm-hmm. he did. I mean, what he was doing with her, that's therapy. I mean, he was essentially trying to kind of throw out these, you know, kind of different perceptions and see where she's at. And then she's like, no concerns. And he just kind of kept gently kind of pushing a little bit with it and exploring it. And finally seems to have gotten her to a place where she could be open to some feedback from him. But I apologize. I lost track of that original question, but I think there's, you know, I don't doubt that she's done what she's done in her life, but I think some of it is maybe coming, her need to express that to other people maybe comes a little bit from maybe an insecurity about how will I be accepted. You know, she's in great shape, but she, you know, she's an older female that may on some level feel like she has to kind of prove herself out there in the field of players that she's with.
It's just so weird with her because sometimes she does seem to be like in this really great mood and we have, you know, clips of her, you know, seemingly like being fun and talking about stuff like yeah. going back to Ko Rong when she's talking about
the bomb doors are open. Prepare to fire.
And then we have her with, you know, then she's like super negative with Suri earlier this season where she's like trying to like put Suri in her place. And obviously with Brad Culpepper, she's just so hot and cold.
Yeah. There's this part of me that, okay, I can say what I really think here. And a lot of people may not like it. And oh, Debbie, if you're listening, I'm really sorry, but here's the reality. You know, I'm 46. She's, how old is Debbie? 50? Is she in her 50s yet?
Yeah, sure. We'll go with that. I don't have the number in front of me.
But she's older. So she's a little bit older. And there are hormonal changes that start to happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do wonder, you know, you're out there, one, under extreme circumstances. You're not eating the same way, even though they've had, you know, it seems like ample food out there. You're not drinking the same way. You know, you don't have your same comforts. And then if there's a hormonal piece, if she's perimenopausal or menopausal, I mean, that is what menopause can look like. Like you are hot and you are cold, literally, and mood swings and, you know, or whether or not there's been anything, you know, just mood swings for her outside of the game. We don't know that. But in the game, you know, that's one little piece that I kind of go, wow, like you said, what is going on? It's hot, it's cold, it's happy, it's sad. It's laughing, it's crying. but it's a little bizarre. Like last week, I think last week was such an extreme. I mean, we really thought you couldn't ignore it anymore. Like, what was that? Like, wow, what just happened?
And I'm pissed.
And then she laughed.
Yeah.
Or was that right after? Then, like, she's laughing. I'm like, is she, what? Yeah, like, what was that? I literally can't make sense of it. Just there's something profoundly happening for her in that moment, whether or not, you know, we have a clue yet what it fully is. You know, I'll look forward to maybe someday. I don't know if she'll talk about that at some point, but it's interesting.
So I had a chance to talk to Cochran about his visit today because I got to see him earlier this afternoon. And he said he really enjoyed his time with Debbie. He thought that he had a lot of fun talking with her and going through everything in that experience. And what was interesting for him was that he got the accounts of what happened last week with Debbie from Debbie. So it was very shocking for him to see sort of this third person view of the altercation between Debbie and Brett Culpepper last week.
Was it I don't know if you can share, was it consistent?
No.
Because that's always what I'm curious about is, you know, is that whose reality? You know, there's his reality, her reality, and how many thousands of viewers watching our reality. So was it consistent?
No, in the Debbie version, he said that she made Brad Culpepper out to be a monster. He's like, oh my God, Brad is horrible. And then he saw the episode last week and was like, oh.
Yeah, which is so funny because that's the complete opposite of, at least for myself, how I'm viewing him. I actually reached out, you know, to try and get in touch with Brad through Monica just recently to say, hey, I feel like I kind of owe you an apology because clearly in his first season, I was not a fan of Brad at all because it was more kind of like this bravado, cocky. I just wasn't a huge fan. But what we saw with the interaction with her, it actually seemed like he was managing her quite well and calmly. So that's fascinating, like just her take versus his read on her.
Yeah, well, I would love to get your insight on what you're seeing with Brad Culpepper because he, too, seems like that he has been a completely different person this time around.
Totally. And, you know, that's somebody that, you know, and again, you know, with the mix-up, I don't have any idea how it's going to play out. But he, you know, whether or not he saw something himself different in the way that he played, whether or not he got feedback from Monica or other people, you know, I don't know what kind of feedback, but he has come back into this game, you know, this time around playing very differently. He seems more relatable. You know, I know it's been kind of the joke like the antiquing and the balls hanging from the tree, but it, you know, it really does. It allows us to kind of see him in a different light. And I think other people on the tribe, you know, don't seem off put by him. I've not heard anybody else talk about, you know, oh, that Brad Culpepper, you know, he's such a blowhard. Other than Haley, all of a sudden, Haley. Haley, you know, might have a few things to say because he's not really done a great job of kind of grooming her and bringing her in and vetting her. But no, I think he's really shifted his game and it looks good on him right now.
What do you attribute that most to? Do you think it's because Monica isn't in the mix this time and for him, he can just focus on what he has to do and he doesn't have sort of like this role of being the protector of Monica also to worry about?
Yeah, I think definitely that can be it, you know, because that's a totally different game. Having your loved one in the game, I'm sure, you know, very different. I might feel the same way and feel this need to protect my husband. You know, or if I heard somebody talking poorly or about him in the game, or I might just say, that's fine, vote him off, just keep me in the game. Who knows? but I think part of it's that. I think he's also, you know, I think he's a pretty intelligent guy. And maybe also in just watching that or in rewatching his season, you know, there's that ability to step outside of it and just through time and some maturity to take a look at it, you know, just to take a look at it and how people were reacting to him. I think maybe he's just a little bit more in tune with that also. So I think it's a combination of factors that have helped him to shift it. But again, he's been able to do it so far.
I want to go back to the Cochran visit, and I just want to get your take on that. Would you have appreciated something like that? Not necessarily the reward, but the opportunity to speak with a former player who was not in the game, who was coming in to talk with you about what's going on at that point?
So here's where I'll probably backtrack on my previous answer. So you asked about, you know, talking to people before you went in the game, which I wouldn't want. But in the middle of the game, absolutely. Because, you know, again, especially in Debbie, you know, well, I'll just say for myself, you know, if you're feeling worn down and kind of emotionally broken down and you don't know what to expect, just to have somebody come in and kind of cheer you on, it's almost kind of like a family visit. Like, that's what it kind of felt like a little bit, was like this family visit and this bonding. I mean, as awkward as that hug was, I kind of get it. It's like you have this person who you feel like is on your side. And yeah, I think there's huge value to that from a mental standpoint, moving forward in the game for anyone.
And the other thing that we consistently have seen with the family visit over the course of Survivor, and certainly it loomed large in Survivor Philippines, where you have, you know, Scoopin and Lisa's loved ones come in, and there's sort of like a moment of like, hey, well, why don't you just vote out these people that we don't know so you guys can win? And they're sort of like, yeah, why don't we just do that? Who cares if Malcolm gave us a loved one's visit? Like, we should vote against him so we have a better chance to win. And they say, yeah, that does make sense. Because I do think that you have this alternate reality that you start to construct after, you know, it's only, you know, 16 days in the case of Debbie and Cochran. But, you know, for 30 days, it's like, oh, this person is my best friend in the whole world. And then you are able to sort of like change that worldview when you see somebody you actually know or somebody from that's not in the construct of the game.
Exactly. It gives you kind of a moment of clarity, you know, and I think of it, it's kind of the same way again with therapy or with, you know, Cochran out there. That's what it's all about. It's about giving a different perception, giving some different feedback. And yeah, those family visits, that's exactly what it does. It kind of wakes people up.
Can we talk a little bit about Ty? Because I think he's such a tough character to understand. He just seems to, time and time again, find himself in this same exact scenario where almost everybody in his tribe is mad at him. He always seems to have idols, but he always is in trouble with everybody. And he's the nicest, sweetest guy. So what is the disconnect for Ty?
So I'll preface this by just saying, I love Ty. I do. But like watching Tribal Council last night, I'm not sure if I've ever seen a worse player at Tribal Council. I'm sure there has been, but yeah, there has been. We had cookies in my season. So I take that back. But, you know.
But there's she didn't say anything that was problematic. She said things that were, you know, maybe not the most intelligent answers.
Right.
But
there
not answers that were really tanking her game.
True. So I think you just helped me clarify the thought that I was having, which is, again, even at Tribal Council, you are who you are. And that answer, again, love Angie, is a reflection on some level of who she is. And I'm not meaning, you know, not into, like, but that's just the way that her mind works in a stressful situation like that. Ty, you know, I see Ty out there, and when we see him at Tribal Council or we see him, like, giving away, you know, strategy, it just seems like it's a reflection of this, like, he's incredibly conflicted. Like he wants to play this game, but there's a part of him that I think wants to avoid, you know, like you said, everybody's mad at him, wants to avoid people being mad at him, wants to avoid being seen as a flipper or disloyal. And that's, I think, exactly, but he's so paranoid at the same time that he's just got this inner conflict that I think he just doesn't know how to manage. And, you know, I think it, on the one hand, you know, he struggles to play the part, so to speak, like just to think this is a game. I can lie to people and I can do it well. Like I'm a horrible liar. But Ty is a really horrible liar. Like he just, I think, doesn't know how to do that well. And so in the game, you know, out of the game, that's great. You know, that's one of the things I love about him, but in the game, it's a liability because he just doesn't know how to maintain, you know, just a plan without kind of having things like we saw last night unravel.
So how do you manage that if you're in a tribe with Ty? You know he's probably always going to have the hidden immunity idol. I mean, it seems like that this group in particular and everybody there, I guess with the exception of Sandra and Varner, has played with him at some point. Don't you have to like really bring him in and sort of like Aubrey did at various points back in Koh Rong, just always be reassuring to Ty that he's in the mix and he's on the right path and that he's 100% solid?
I think you do. I think you have to do kind of constant management. And we saw it last night. It's kind of like Zeke did that, you know, which was impressive for Zeke. I mean, that's exactly what Zeke did at Tribal Council. He kind of challenged. I mean, he managed Ty in a way that was challenging to him and kind of, hey, here's our perception of you. You're telling us this. But basically, like, put up or shut up, you know, prove it to us. He was kind of managing Ty and talking about trust. But I think outside of, you know, those moments, yeah, I think you have to do that. And somehow, you know, getting kind of an agreement on, a clear agreement on who we tell the player or what if, I mean, you almost have to coach him, I think, on what if someone comes up to you and they ask, what are you going to say? Because that's when he kind of becomes the deer in headlights. You know, like, and he can't lie. And so even just that pause, you know, people pick up on pauses in speech out there. They pick up on, you know, where your eyes dart to. I mean, people are just looking for anything to give them a clue that you're lying to them.
And you go to Tribal Council with him, and Jeff picks up on that. Where, yeah, going back to Survivor Koh Rong, I mean, there was a couple of times where he ends up spilling the beans about things at Tribal Council and Jeff calls him out, including that there was a super idol in the game. And, you know, and Jeff will say, hold on, Ty, it looks like that, you know, there's people that are moving their eyes around that they didn't know what you just said. He's like, oh, really? Oh,
right.
Yeah.
and then he doesn't know how to respond to it. Like, he's just kind of like, I mean, he just doesn't quite have that ease of, you know, just kind of getting that flow to, you know, kind of recover and come back from those moments. You know, I am impressed the last night that he, because I think it would have been incredibly detrimental probably to him. As much as I thought, oh, Ty, if you don't play an idol and you go home with two, I like definitely one of the worst players, but he didn't. And I think, you know, and I don't know, I'd love to hear from Ty at some point, you know, of what made him decide not to play an idol just to secure, you know, his own safety. You know, and part of me wonders though, was it, if I play an idol, now they will definitely think that I don't trust them. And they were challenging him on just trust us, basically just stick with the plan. So I don't know. I'm curious to find out what his, you know, what his take are, it will be on that Tribal Council.
And for Ty, I feel like that the plan, and it's funny you say stick to the plan, is almost like the right plan for Keith Nail, where it was like, and I think in Survivor Second Chances, it was the idea of like, don't find an idol, don't look for an idol, don't get an advantage, just be, and I think that Keith, you know, was right there up until the point that they started messing around with like, okay, pretend you have a fake idol and he doesn't know what to do with it. But I just, you got to keep it simple when you're not somebody who's like a Tony who's out there.
Right. And that's exactly, you know, we were talking about, you know, how I thought I would fare, you know, coming back in. That's my brain, you know, is as much as I'd like to think that I've got, you know, some pretty good intelligence and, you know, I get by okay. In those kinds of moments, I need a simple plan. I need to know what's the plan. And then I can stick with it. I can follow it. And we're just seeing, you know, there's so much going on, and I think it's just a lot for Ty in particular to manage, you know. And then we're getting these tribal councils that are just mass chaos, which is driving me crazy. But it just complicates things even more.
So coming out of last week's episode, Aubrey was somebody who was in a really bad spot, that she was the person who I think that you could have maybe squinted and say, okay, well, Aubrey was partnered with Malcolm. She's somebody that maybe could have gone on a Malcolm and Denise type experience and gone far in the game. But ultimately, Malcolm goes out, and then she was partnering up with JT. He goes out. But now she's saved by the tribe swap. Do you think that Aubrey can now start to get back on the right track?
I do. You know, definitely, you know, just looking at the tribe that she ended up with, you know, you've got Brad Culpepper, who just, you know, for as much as he's playing a better game, You know, I think he can be seen on some levels at least as maybe a physical threat. Although Aubrey in her own season was not too shabby. I mean, she was kind of a beast girl, beast lady herself in some of those challenges. But you've got Michaela, who may eventually be seen not only as, you know, more of a physical threat, but from a social standpoint. Michaela, I don't know, it's going to be interesting to see how Michaela kind of fits in with this new Mana tribe. So I think she can. I think she has, you know, it's this new life. I think she's got some room to maneuver again, you know, and Saria's, you know, definitely, I think, you know, Aubrey, I think, I'm not sure, I can't remember if in any of her pre-season interviews if she had commented about Saria. But Saria, you know, a lot of people, nobody's talking about her right now, but, you know, Saria's a threat. And so hopefully, you know, my hope is that Aubrey can kind of stay in the background, do what she's got to do, but just not draw attention to herself, at least not for quite a while.
You know, Saria is an interesting case because she hasn't been to a tribal council yet through six episodes of the show, but she's also somebody who's one of these big threats in the game. Do you think that she has been on the reverse Denise course, where if you could just avoid every tribal council, you'll be okay? Or do you think that if the first time she goes to one, she's going to be in a lot of trouble?
I think it's going to depend on, one, who she ends up at that tribal council with. You know, if it's still, you know, Nuku and Mana, you know, and Mana, or if it's, you know, a post-merge. I think it's going to depend a lot on who's still sitting there. You know, who else is somebody going to see? You know, now that Sander's out, you know, that was a big one. But, you know, who else gets identified as a bigger threat because they've been more vocal at past tribal councils, or, you know, they've... You know, I think Aubrey would definitely, I think, see her again as, you know, as a bigger threat. So I think if she can get farther, I think she has definitely has a better chance. So I'd love to, like, if she could not go to a tribal council until the merge, I think that's definitely in her favor, for sure.
And you think that Aubrey and Saria could be a good partnership?
I don't know that Aubrey would trust Saria. I think she could pair up, but I think Aubrey would have to be pretty aware. I just don't know that she's going to trust Saria solidly. I could honestly see, you know, Aubrey connecting with Haley. I could actually see Aubrey, I don't know why I'm thinking this, but I could see her connect with Brad or even Troyzan before Sierra or Saria. You know, I don't know. That's where I don't know if it's just personalities. I don't know if it's the impression that people have been left with of, you know, like Troyzan. I don't know that, you know, in his season, if people thought of him as this, you know, he was definitely the one like, it's my island and not playing with the girls. But I don't think was seen as that big of a threat. Saria has just kind of been viewed as this kind of very conniving, again, kind of, she's got a little bit of that Sandra. Mm-hmm. It's the tone, and she can kind of just, I could imagine, I've never gotten to meet Saria, and I would love to, because I could imagine just sitting down and getting sucked into a conversation with her, you know, just because of personality and, you know, voice tone. I think she could just kind of pull you in.
Yeah, I think that's definitely one of her strong suits. And I just can't believe that we haven't seen her go to a tribal council yet. I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see if the other people that are out there consider her a threat or if they've just gotten so used to her.
Exactly. And just have kind of forgotten to even be worried about her. So, and I'm trying to think, other than Saria, who hasn't gone...
I think she's the only one after this point, because you had that group, basically everybody who Saria was with for the most part, except for Troyzan. I think they all ended up swapping together.
Exactly. You're right.
That original Nuku group, only JT is out of the game. And it seems like that we have almost two factions, where you have one group that's been together now for a while with Ozzy, Andrea, Sarah, and Zeke. That group has been together now for, you know, since the first tribe swap. And then you have the other group of people from Nuku, where you have certainly Brad and Sierra are there. Debbie is sort of kind of with them. It's almost like I feel like that the Ozzy group is in the best spot, because they seem to have the numbers of people that have been together for the longest.
Well, and I think you're seeing that group as a more cohesive group. You know, we don't see, you know, we haven't at least gotten, you know, we haven't seen, other than Ty being, you know, because Ty was originally with all of them also in the very, you know, first Nuku tribe, I think, correct?
Right.
So, yeah, so you've got, they just seem more cohesive versus, you know, looking over there, you know, you have Brad, Sierra, and Haley, but they're not quite as solid, you know, clearly, you know, Haley, you know, even commented at One Tribal Council, you know, well, it's not really, you're not really saying, basically saying anything to make me feel really good. So they're just not as cohesive of a group. So I do, I agree that that original, you know, that Nuku tribe, that four is in a good place in terms of a stronger alliance. And they seem to be, obviously they voted consistently together last night. So I do. I think they're in a good position.
Do you think that this post-merge game could start to shift into a battle between Brad's team versus Ozzy's team, with the rest of the scraps from the original Mana being sort of the kingmakers here?
I'm not sure. I'm trying to, and bear with me, I'm looking at, yeah, I mean, I think it could. It definitely could. I mean, you've got kind of two, again, kind of strong alpha males that, yeah, I think you could see that unfold.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see which side gets picked off here, you know, moving forward into the merge. And it does seem as though Brad already has his hooks into Troyzan. And how big of a factor can Troyzan be in picking up those Mana people? You have Jeff Varner with that group. Ken Zeke looks like that he has a good relationship with him. Could they bring in like the Haleys and the Aubreys and anybody else that's left over from the original Mana tribe? So I feel like that's sort of where we're headed, because the Mana tribe has lost half of its members from the first 10.
Exactly. But to get to that place, though, do you think, so looking at the Nuku tribe, you know, Jeff clearly on the bottom didn't, you know, was not a part of, you know, clearly had the plan to vote Sandra out. But do you think that Zeke really wants to bring him in? I mean, I just see more of a loyalty to that original Nuku tribe.
I think that what you want to do is sort of everybody starts to curate their own pawns in the game, where it's like, okay, I'm part of this big group, but I have here a couple of people that are on the bottom that are outside the alliance that potentially would vote with me if things ended up breaking a different way. I know certainly in Survivor the Amazon, that was something that I was looking at, where I was part of a bigger alliance, you know, that even had like the Alexes and Dinas and Jenna and Heidis. But at the same time, I was still trying to, you know, cultivate, you know, Butch and Matt and even Christy. And then when the opportunity presented itself, that I was able to flip things around. And I think you see it a lot in Big Brother as well. I know you're not a huge Big Brother person, but these pawns are super valuable.
So good point with that, then. I mean, that, you know, making sure that you're keeping those connections and working on those relationships all. I mean, you really, it's kind of like that idea that you have to be then really conscious of those relationships all the time, just in case.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. It'll be interesting.
And then the challenge is going to be for those people at Nuku, where, you know, we always talk about the intentional Matt Singh. Are those last couple of people that are left from Mana, are we going to see them sort of right there in the final four, where everybody from Nuku started to go after one another and just forgot about whether it's like the Haley and Jeff Varner or whoever you want to say are the last two people from Mana?
Yeah, I suppose you could. I mean, you could see that happen. But again, that original Nuku, or that Nuku, they just seem, you know, like in the intentional Matt Singh or with Tandang, there was so much tension happening all along. You know, they'd never gone to tribal council, but there were all of the, you know, kind of little pockets of infighting all along. And we're just not seeing that. At least we're not showing it. They're not showing it with between Zeke or Ty or Andrew or Ozzy. So I don't, or Sarah, you know, so I don't know if they'll end up kind of like eating their own. But you never know. I know Sarah did mention, you know, the four is boring. So maybe she'll be a part of that.
Yeah, it's not just boring. She said it was also stupid.
That's stupid. That's boring. I don't like it.
Yeah.
So maybe you're right. So
Do you think that this is a scenario where Ozzy and Brad could team back up? Because it looks like that Brad Culpepper has wanted to get rid of the Young Bucks in the game, where he did not want to work with Caleb. He was targeting Malcolm. He, from what Sandra was saying, that he had a pregame alliance with Sandra, and that he, that's why he didn't want to keep JT around. He didn't care about JT. He wanted to save Sandra. It seems like that these young guys, these young alpha males, he doesn't want anything to do with, but these older alpha males like Troyzan, that he's up for keeping them around.
Yep. I don't know, because I don't know if it's really that he feels threatened by them, or does he just think, or will he think that Ozzy, you know, isn't ultimately a threat in the, you know, depending on, you know, socially how he's played. I'm not sure. I mean, I it's with as many changes as there have been all season. I think this is one of those seasons where, again, you can't rule anything out, because it's like that idea, you know, like desperate times call for desperate measures. So could that happen? Yep, definitely. You know, like if there's a merge, and depending on what the breakout is or breakdown is between males and females, because I'm trying to think, where are we at now between, you know, kind of that ratio, you know, depending on.
Only two women have been voted off. We've lost six people. It's been four guys and two women.
So maybe. But I mean, it was interesting. You know, he was, you know, Troyzan's a guy, but I think it wasn't just that he's connecting with Troyzan. He's just looking for reasons to connect, or reasons to kind of build that alliance. So maybe he'd have those same kind of thoughts with Ozzy. You know, hey, so one way I can connect with him is just, you know, this male alliance. You know, here's another alpha male, and, you know, how can we kind of protect each other? Or could he be a bigger target for, you know, somebody other than, you know, somebody going after Brad himself? So again, I don't know. Yeah, Rob, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
So when we're talking about, you know, Exile Island, and, you know, it's clearly this is really different. This isn't your typical Exile Island, and, you know, Debbie's on this boat, and she gets the advantage kit. You know, I have my own thoughts on whether or not that was the right advantage to pick for her or not, and, you know, we won't know, obviously, for a while. But I'm curious, number one, you know, what you would have picked. I guess I'm just curious, like, what would you have picked?
I think I myself would have picked the extra vote, which Debbie ended up picking, but I don't know if that was the right answer for Debbie. I had a chance to talk with Cochran about this on the Facebook video that we did for CBS, and I asked him if he was allowed to give advice to Debbie about which things she could pick, because that wasn't shown, and he said they actually did spend a lot of time working on that, and he sort of was pushing for her to take the extra vote. I just don't think she's going to be able to play it correctly.
Well, and that's what it's, you know, and that's exactly what I had thought. You know, I thought, okay, one, you could, and I was thinking probably more, it's hard not to watch the game and just think through the lenses of how you might play versus trying to get into that individual's mindset. But, you know, I had thought for myself, like, okay, the hidden immunity idol kit, yeah, no, because I'm a sucky liar. And so in my mind, I'd have to create some story about where I found it, how I found it, and I'm going to get myself caught. And when somebody wants to look at it or thinks it's, I'm just, somehow I'm not going to be able to lie well enough to pull it off. And then I thought that extra vote, you know, we haven't seen it play out clearly yet when someone's been given that. There's just no guarantee. You know, and with Debbie, you know, I guess what I thought was for myself, I probably would have chosen the tribe advantage for the next challenge. Mainly because here, if you're already away from your tribe, and she didn't know which tribe she was coming back into at that point, you know, so to kind of set herself up as kind of this peace offering, and even if she was able to tell them, you know, whether or not they would have believed her or not, to say, I had these three choices, and I did something because I think we need to be able to be strong as a tribe, you know, I think could have, I don't know, I guess I just wonder, you know, how beneficial that option might have been for her versus whatever might play out with this extra vote.
I agree 100% with what you're saying. And Stephen and I got into a little bit of a debate about that he thought that it's not that big of a deal to get that sort of advantage in the tribe challenge. Cochran also said that in the moment they were talking about it, they both felt like that was the least impactful thing. But for Debbie to go back sort of with, you know, hat in hand, say, okay, new tribe, I don't know if you're happy to have me or not, but I have something that you might like. It's an advantage. And to get through, she basically has to get through one tribal council. Now, maybe she feels like, okay, Nuku is in the advantage. She doesn't know necessarily if she's going back to the group with Brad or not, but she might feel like, okay, well, we'll definitely vote out a Mana person. Again, you know, we've spoken about her overconfidence. So maybe she thought, I won't be voted out no matter which tribe I go to. So I might as well get the extra vote. But I really think it would help her as a peace offering, sort of like with that neutral box twist where you pick the big bag of rice and say, hey, I had a chance to get the idol. I got you guys this bag of rice. I think it really would help her standing in the game.
Absolutely. I mean, you think of the person. Well, think of the person who brings donuts to the office. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves that person. You know, so it's kind of like bringing that back versus the person who walks in with, you know, their own donut. It's like, you know, it just, I think, would have set or could have set up a more positive tone for her. But now we'll see. I'll be curious. It'll be interesting to see if she can play it, or if she can, I guess, use that extra vote now that she has it. Will she use it and just kind of keep it to herself, or will she use it to leverage building some other alliances? So, I mean, I can see how that can still obviously have some incredible value and help her move forward in the game.
Denise, let me put you on the spot here. What are the chances? I want a percentage that Debbie correctly plays the extra vote advantage.
Oh, I'm going to eat my words. I'm going to say 10%.
10%. That's low. Oh. That's low.
It's low. Just because I think it's so hard.
It is.
Because I think she's going to have to, you know, there's just no guarantee. I mean, you have to know and really trust. I mean, you have to have this core group that you trust and you know everybody's going to vote. Because then you're looking at counting on, oh my gosh, all of a sudden I lost track of how many people are in the tribe. Six other people or however many other people to vote in the way that you want them to vote for that to work.
Yeah.
And it's just, there's so much chance with it.
So yeah, there's so much going on with this new twist about how if there's a tie at the tribal council, then it goes to a rock draw. So maybe the extra vote might be beneficial in that circumstance where you're worried about some sort of like a 3-3 split. So you could put another vote on somebody. But what if you do it wrong and you force a rock draw? So I don't know. I think I might have just take the sure thing. I mean, maybe you felt like, or Debbie felt like, or Cochran felt like that. Okay, maybe how many more tribe challenges will there be? You know, you figure, is it only one? But, you know.
True. And I guess I suppose we don't know if it's a reward. I don't know if it clarified if is it an advantage at a immunity or reward, whether or not that matters or not.
Okay, well, we'll see. Let me get into some of these questions I have for you from the listeners.
Awesome.
Mike Christensen wants to know, is Troyzan creating a self-fulfilling prophecy by partnering with Brad and being paranoid about the women again? Do gender dynamics play that much of a role out there? We were talking a little bit about the number of men and women left. Brad and Troyzan are the only two men at the new Nuku tribe. So do you think that is that sort of like a self-fulfilling prophecy to think about the game in those terms?
I think it could be, but I don't think he's afraid of the women, though. Do you? I mean, I think when he was talking to Brad, it didn't seem like he's playing that out completely again. I mean, he's open to working with Brad, but I think he was clearly open to talking with Sarah, you know, and making an alliance with her, you know, or having some out there. So I don't know if I just answered that or if I just went off on a totally different tangent, but
sounds like no, it's not a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, no.
But how much do survivors, and I'm not talking about Troyzan specifically, do they sort of wear those scars from the first game where, oh, this happened to me last time, all of the women got together, and that's why I lost the last game? How much do you feel like survivor players are sort of like, well, I'm not going to let that happen to me again?
You know, now, when you put it that way, I think there's definitely... Yes, I think we probably do, but I don't think it's just about the scars in the game. I think it's about who we are, again, in our own lives. Like, who are we drawn to? Who do we find connections with? You know, who's more comfortable? You know, you see a lot of, like, the women's alliances. Is it just that that's the kind of, you know, girls or women that they're drawn to? So I think part of it is, you know, that they've been burned and they want to avoid that. Part of it's just that's just where they're comfortable. That's who they can connect with.
Do you see somebody who is a likely fourth vote with Brad and Troy, Zan and Sierra? You have Haley, you have Michaela, you have Aubrey, and you have Sari over there. Do you see somebody that you think is the most natural fourth person for them?
You know, actually, I think, let's see, Troy, Zan. So you're saying Brad, Troy, Zan, and Sierra, because Sierra will definitely stay with Brad, mm-hmm. at least right then, I believe. You know, I think Aubrey could come into that.
Interesting.
I think.
She could be the fourth. I mean, she was
maybe
with Troy, Zan at the mm-hmm. original Mana, so that's always a possibility.
Yeah, I don't have a solid one that I think would be a sure one to come in, because Michaela, I don't know where Michaela's going to go or who she's going to connect with. You know, I'm just not sure yet with her.
Okay, Amanda Rabinowitz wants to know, is Debbie someone that you could work with and bring to the end, or is she like Abby, too toxic to keep in the game? You were somebody who, back in Survivor Philippines, you openly talked about how you didn't want Abby to go to the end. She was too much baggage there with Abby Maria. It wasn't cultural. It was that she was, not so nice with everybody out there. Now, would you be able to feel the same way about Debbie, where you would not say, let's try to keep her around as long as possible to go to the final three?
See, here's where I can strategize. I can strategize and think about it on paper and know what probably the right thing to do is in the game. But then there's just our tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Debbie and Abby are totally different. You know, they're in even though they have similarities in terms of the amount of energy that it took or would take, you know, to try and manage them to get them to the end, at least with Debbie, for the most part, if you can just kind of let some stuff roll off, I think it would be easier to take her to the end. But it also, you know, if you have these outbursts or these things where you're constant, like kind of trying to do damage control and make sure she's okay and make sure that she, you know, feels like she's being included and listened to, it's going to get exhausting. And so then there's that part of me that goes, oh my gosh, I just don't want to go to the end with somebody that I have to do that with. And that would probably be why I would lose the game.
Hey, you know, it might not be such a bad idea for Aubrey to get this co-wrong three going, to sit in the final three with Debbie and Ty. It'd be a lot of work to get there, but you got to feel pretty good about your chances.
She could, but now if that seed's been planted about the threat of the three of them, you know, now how many other people are going to be paying attention to, you know, is that alliance reconnecting? And, you know, clearly Aubrey was more connected with Ty than she was with Debbie. So I don't know if, you know, if there's a lot of love lost between those two. And you have to just think, you know, can they kind of get over that for the benefit of their own game? You know, it'd be like me and Abby going back. Like, could we come back into the game and kind of let bygones be bygones and say, let's try and push this through to the end? You never know if you can accomplish that.
Josh Spaulding wants to know from you. Now, Denise, you went to every tribal council and got the win. What do you think of being this far into the game and there are still people who haven't been to tribal council? We talked about how Sari hasn't been to a tribal mm-hmm. council. You know, Michelle back in Koh Rong, I don't think that she went to a tribal council until after the merge, and she ultimately got the win. So I don't want to say necessarily that going to every tribal council makes you win, and avoiding the tribal council doesn't always make you win. But how important is it to have that experience under your belt as a survivor? Or if you're a four-time player like Sari, you don't need that experience.
Right. I think you just hit on it right there. I think if you've never had the experience, it's definitely good to be able to just go and sit there and understand just what the process is and how to get through that. But, you know, I mean, there are pros and cons. You know, not going has benefits. Going has benefits. You know, I've heard it talked about before, you know, the idea of, you know, having to go to to tribal council is beneficial because you have to test those alliances. You have to test, you know, are they going to stay true? You know, we saw that with Tandang. They had never gone, and then by the time they got to tribal council, there was enough tension, you know, that they were willing to vote out, you know, RC. You know, I think, yeah, they were willing to vote her out versus, you know, they could have easily have voted out one of the original Calabao or Calabao that came in. So I think there are pros and cons. So I don't think it's necessarily automatically beneficial. You know, Sari's clearly been to tribal council plenty of times, so she knows how it works. She's coherent enough at tribal council. so she can perform there. And so for her, you know, again, being the only one, it's not a bad thing for her to just kind of be able to stay in the background and not have that attention be drawn to her any more than it already eventually will be.
Okay, John DeGrief wants to know, how valuable is the ability to remain calm when trying to persuade someone to act against their interest? Now, Denise, we touched on this a little bit earlier, and we have the sort of pitch that Sandra was giving and, you know, like certainly that Boston Rob will give people. But by contrast, we have Tony, who does not always abide by those rules. So that how important is that?
I think it's hugely important. You kind of have to be able to read your audience, you know, and who you're, you know, one, who you're trying to convince. And are they somebody that needs to be kind of motivated and woken up, or do they need more the reassurance, you know, to, like you said, go against their better judgment? Yeah, so I think you do. I think you have to be able to stay calm, and you have to be able to kind of be perceptive, at least on some degree, either as you're talking and seeing how they're reacting, you know, to know, how am I coming across to them? Am I, you know, are they hearing me? Are they tuning me out? But yeah, I think calm is definitely better. Coming from it as a parent, yelling doesn't work. So, or even just kind of that intensity that some players can have, like Tony. I mean, he just has this, I mean, the intensity just oozes off of him. And I think it makes people nervous because they just don't necessarily trust that he's, yeah, I think it creates for some reason, just a feeling of mistrust.
Yeah, that's what I see on all of the dog whisperer videos that I watch, mm-hmm. Denise. That's
exactly.
Not what Cesar Millan is telling you, to be very aggressive with everybody. No, calm,
right.
Assertive, he says.
Exactly. But calm, exactly. You said it exactly. Calm, assertive. You know, it's that ability, like Sandra, of she's staying calm, but she's very clearly, she's calm, but not passive. She's clearly saying, you know, and presenting something as she knows what she's talking about, and you can trust what I'm saying without pushing it on someone.
And also, I would just love to get your take while we're here on Tony. Could you just give us your sort of like a quick analysis of Tony the player?
He's an awesome player. And again, somebody I'd love to see back there again. Didn't necessarily want to see him go home, but in the game, especially, you know, this season coming back in, you know, both he and Sierra, unfortunately, just came out so strong. And I think part of that's just their personalities. You know, whether or not it's Sierra, I need to come back and I have something to prove. Tony, that's just him. I don't think that's him thinking I need to come. It's just that's how he's wired. So I think he just, in the game, just came back in, and it's just kind of go big, go home, and he just went too big.
Denise, one of the things that we've talked about doing in the past was that you were going to look at players' tattoos and tell us what the significance was. I'm trying to think of some of the notable tattoos on this season, but Brad Culpepper has a lot of ink. Did you catch any of the tattoos that he has?
He does have a lot of ink, but you know what? I have not honestly studied it because I know he's got the one on the side that's like the circles. It's kind of a cool, funky one.
And it seems like new stuff since the last time he played.
Yeah.
Now, he has the names of his kids on him. What does that tell you about a person who has that tattooed on them?
Well, I think, you know, not, you know, I think it's a pretty clear message for me that, you know, obviously family means a lot. There's a significance. Maybe it's a reminder for him of, you know, just what he needs to do or why he's doing something. You know, it's for his kids. You know, I think they have a pretty... I think they're a pretty close connected family. I don't know, you know, I just got to meet Monica and Brad last summer for the first time. And, you know, I just get this feeling that, you know, their family is extremely important to them. So, yeah, when you see somebody with, you know, death dates, birth dates, you know, faces of people, clearly those people hold, you know, significant meaning, or I would assume, you know, for him in his life. So, but the other things I don't know what his are. I need to get some still shots. So if anybody's got still shots of them, you know, I'd love to look and just try and figure out, you know, what are they? Are they, you know, I don't know if they're sports things, life things, tribal. I'm not sure what he's got on him.
I feel like I saw he has like a yin yang now on like his midsection.
Is that the red and the blue kind of, or like it's something's red?
It might be a Pepsi logo.
Hopefully not. A Pepsi.
Are Hopefully you not. They have not. A lot of bad PR right now, so I don't know
that
necessarily.
That might not be a good thing. Well, but hey, Zane had Monster, you know, Monster drink tattoo on him, so Pepsi might not be that far-fetched for somebody. So, you know, and that was pretty obvious, like, for him. He just liked to drink Monster drink.
So, oh, the Monster energy literally. Drink. I thought because he has, like, Frankenstein. I thought that was the Monster that he likes.
Oh, you know, well, he had that, too. But then he literally had the Monster energy drink logo tattooed on himself. So
okay.
you got to really love something to permanently put it on your body.
Was that a paid product placement?
I don't think so. I'm gonna make a wild guess and say that's a no.
Okay, I'm trying to think of any other interesting tattoos. Anything else stand out to you? Ozzy has a lot of ink.
Yeah, I have not. He's got a lot, and on his legs, I noticed. But I just haven't seen still shots of them. You know, and it was so different because with Zane, not only you know I had seen and been really trying to look at his tattoos even in casting. You know, because you see these people, you know, through, you know, and I don't know if it's the same through, you know, going back a second time, if you have that same opportunity to kind of observe people before you're actually in the game a little bit. But, you know, definitely once in the game, you know, I was definitely looking at what was on his hands and what was on his arms and on his neck. And so, but when I'm watching it from here at home, everything's going in such a flash that, you know, I haven't. But tattoos are pretty, I mean, tattoos can, you know, they tell some good stories for people.
You know, they're very talented. Also, oh, well, the other one is that, you know, Beast Mode Cowboy said that Ciara Dawn Thomas and Haley Ford got matching Dirty 30 tattoos.
Exactly. So clearly says, you know,
I don't think they say Dirty 30 as far as I know, but they did get
probably,
matching.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't necessarily mean because they got the same, you know, and so you could read into that. So is it because they got the same tattoo that, hey, they're all really connected? Eh, I'm guessing not. It just means that that experience was clearly significant enough that they wanted something to kind of remind them and remember, you know, remember it by. But yes, I mean, there's a lot of ink out there right
okay.
now. So,
all right. Well, Denise, here's what I'd like you to do. If this is possible, I don't want to put more homework on your plate as you watch
awesome.
The rest of the season and you notice anything. Can you just send me a Facebook message and sort of give me any sort of breaking updates that you have?
Absolutely. And hey, if any fans out there that are listening to the podcast, if they have screenshots, because I know there's people out there that have an amazing talent to do screenshots.
Yes. Do you still do Twitter? What's the best way to send you those?
You know, probably the best way would be I have my Denise Stapley Survivor Philippines Facebook page. They can send me a private message there, or if they're on Twitter, can send me a Twitter message. I have an Instagram, but I keep it private because it's mostly my daughter's friends.
Mm-hmm.
So for the most part, I don't accept requests on there. But so definitely my Twitter's public or that Survivor Philippines page. But yeah, if anybody wants to do some screenshots of the tattoos, especially if there's writing or dates,
okay.
are always kind of interesting. So yeah,
very good
which
stuff.
Like yeah, it's kind of interesting. Like Malcolm still has one that I don't know what it means.
Oh,
so,
what is
yeah.
it?
It is. He's got one, and it looks. Like I think I don't know if he was joking or serious. To be honest, I still don't know to this day if he's joking or serious. He said it was like from his secret society at Dartmouth. It almost looks like interconnected, like these U's with circle. I can't even describe it, but it's really small, and it's underneath on. I want to say it's underneath on like his side or kind of by his side a little bit up. I think. Unless I'm making stuff up, but I think that's what he's got on there. I'll have to text him and say, send me a picture of your tattoo, please. So
okay.
I can try and figure out what it is.
All right. This is a question from Ariel Kalish Glassman, who says, Denise and Rob, Sarah used the word grooming to describe Sandra's approach to luring players to become comfortable with her in hopes that they'll work with her. The word grooming is typically used in relation to predator behavior. As a mental health professional, can you see what Sarah is referring to, or is she off base? Now, we touched on that quote earlier in the episode, but did that word grooming jump out to you?
It you know, grooming is definitely, when you think of, you know, she's a cop. I mean, so I think she can look at players' behaviors from a criminal perspective and grooming would be definitely a term that would be used in her field. So definitely from, you know, not just like a sexual predator, but a criminal predator, or you think of, you know, just people who run scams and how they groom people. You know, you've got some of the motivational people that groom people to come in and kind of buy into their belief system. So it jumped out, but not like, oh my gosh, like she's calling her, she's not calling Sandra a predator by any means, but she's definitely seeing like she knows how to do that. She knows how to groom them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Samantha Alexander wants to ask you that if Denise were to take Cochran's place in the episode, what advice would you have given Debbie?
I think maybe it's wishful thinking, but I'd like to think that I might have asked her some of the similar questions. You know, it sounds like he was not, like he really didn't have time to prepare. Like he was kind of coming in blind and, you know, just had to kind of hop up on the boat and have a conversation with her. And so I'd probably have come in and kind of approached it like I do with some of my clients. You know, hey, tell me, you know, where are you at? How are you doing? What are you concerned about? And then we just would have kind of unfolded things from there. But I'd like to think that I might have approached it somewhat similarly to Cochran and asking her about kind of those concerns. Like, do you have concerns about players? Or how do you think, like, I probably would have wanted to ask her, you know, how do you think you're coming across? Like, how do you think you're, you know, blending in with your tribe? Kind of what's your goal with your tribe moving forward? So that's kind of how I would have approached it.
Do you think they should do this again? Did you like how this played out?
I did. It was different. I mean, we've never had anything like this, right? Like Exile's never been turned into a good thing that I remember. It was interesting. I wasn't sure. I can tell you, you know, before the episode, I was kind of thinking like, okay, they're going to bring somebody back. Like for what? It's not going to be to stay. So it's going to be for a visit, but why? So it kind of makes sense. And like I said, you know, it kind of has the flavor for me of like an early family visit, depending on who, you know, Cochran's a pretty, you know, was like almost like the perfect one, I think, to come in for Debbie. You know, I don't know if just the personality fit was good. You know, I don't think Cochran takes himself too seriously. You know, he can humor himself, which I think is, and he could kind of roll with kind of her quirkiness. So he was the perfect one for her. So yeah, I think it could be interesting to see other players go out there and have that play out again.
Alicia Rosen wants to know, do you think that Debbie should tell the group about her Exile Island trip and how it really was a reward, or should she let people assume it was a horrible, isolating experience?
I think she needs to take that to her grave.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like lock it up, lock it down, and pretend you're hungry. I would probably honestly have asked, can I rub some dirt on me somehow? Like, because you don't want to come back looking too clean. I mean, no, I think you got to take that to your grave.
Yeah,
definitely.
How long do you think she was out there for? I mean, did she have to like sleep out on the deck of the boat?
You know, it made it sound like, or, you know, from, I guess I assumed she was there overnight, or was it just, no, because it wouldn't have just been to the end of that night. I mean, because they had to go to, you know, do the challenge and lose the challenge. So I'm assuming she was there overnight.
Yeah. I don't know. That seems weird that she would like, could she go inside the boat?
Even not being inside the boat, there's so many creature comforts out on that deck. I mean, that's still like heaven. I mean, it's amazing. You probably know, like something so small can seem huge. Like just coming from Mat Singh, like, and our conditions there and going to Calabao. And I mean, I thought their shelter was like a palace. So then going to, you know, a deck of a boat, even without being covered, I mean, it might even be okay to say, oh, that's fine. I'll sit underneath the table, eat some chips, and it can rain all night.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, there's just so many other comforts that are there.
Yeah, that coach flight home from the Amazon was like, oh my God, how luxurious is this?
Yeah.
This is so fantastic. This cushion is amazing.
Like, I get toilet paper. I get a free drink. Oh my gosh. I know. Like, it shifts your perspective completely, at least short term.
Denise, Kevin Donnelly says, idols are terrible. Do you think are there too many idols in the game? I mean, Ty has found 3 idols now in 6 hours of this show. There's 3 idols total. We've got an advantage for Debbie and an extra vote. We've got the legacy advantage. Is there too much stuff going on?
You know, for me personally, I don't enjoy it quite as much when there's this much stuff going on. because, like I said, you know, I'm having to make charts to try and remember, like, wait a minute, like, we've almost forgotten that Sierra still has an advantage. You know, we've got to remember, you know, Troyzen has an idol. Now we've got to remember that Ty has two idols. You know, it's trying to keep stuff straight gets a, it almost can take away from it. And if you're in the game, you know, at this point, you just don't know. I mean, I'd love to go to a season to see there being no idols. Like, I don't know how that would be, you know, where people are still looking, but there's nothing to be found. But yeah, there are a lot of moving parts.
I mean, it's the kind of thing where I feel like a little is good, but too much seasoning, perhaps. I mean, we have at the final 13, that's when Sierra Dawn Thomas could use her legacy advantage. I mean, what happens hypothetically if Ty plays his idol, gives his idol to somebody else, Troyzen takes out his idol, Sierra Dawn Thomas plays the legacy advantage, Debbie says, oh, I got to play my extra vote now. I mean, it could be a 2-hour episode.
It could, and we've had it. I'm trying to think of one that was, you know, that.
I think it actually is supposed to be a 2-hour episode that night, so maybe that is what happens.
Oh, no. Okay, well, maybe it is. I mean, truly, you're going to be drawing diagrams to try and figure out, so wait, so who's still, and there have been a couple of seasons where it was similar to that. It was, wait, we've got two idols played, or this, and I've had to pause the TV and go, wait, who's even still eligible to be voted out? And sitting there, you know, I'd probably screw up and end up voting for somebody who already had an idol.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you could just get lost. It can just get really confusing. So I think you're right on the money when you say, you know, a little is good, a lot, kind of overkill.
Well, it's probably going to be problematic when we, the people who, you know, care about this game enough that we listen to podcasts and are talking about it, if we have a hard time figuring out what's going on, the 8 or 9 million other people that are watching this show that don't think about it nearly as much as we do, they have no chance to figure out what's going on.
Exactly. And that's what I have heard. You know, a lot of people that are kind of more casual, you know, casual viewers. You know, definitely, like, just the shift in what's happening at Tribal Council, a lot of them just don't like it. They're like, what is going on? Like, this is crazy. Like, why aren't they sitting down? And why are they talking? Why are they having these, you know, crazy conversations? Even just things like that, you know, from if you're already having issues with that with just a more casual viewer, I think that it can become problematic.
Okay. Denise, I want to ask you this question from David Baltazar, who wants to know, do you think you got a raw deal being placed against Kim Spradlin in the CBS Heroes versus Villains fan vote? Would you rather have been up against somebody else in the first round? Denise, I saw that on your Facebook page also you were talking about this. Yes. All right. Do you feel good about moving on past Kim Spradlin?
Do I think I have good odds? No.
Yes.
I think my odds are right up there with, you know, my odds of thinking, you know, how well, you know, what's the likelihood that Debbie's going to play that extra vote in her favor. I mean, I kind of joked. I've been joking with, there were a couple of interactions on Twitter about it, you know, and I was kind of joking like, yeah, you know, I'm up against the doe-eyed beauty herself. Like, I even voted for her. You know, it's like, you know, she's a good player. She's a really well-liked player, and she's a good player, and she's a nice person. So, yeah, anyone who would like to help me, you know, move through that bracket, absolutely fantastic.
Hey, vote, I think you got Troyzen's vote, Denise.
Awesome. Well, and what did Debbie say? Vote often. Vote early. Vote often.
Yeah. Well, I think Troyzen actually filed a complaint to CBS. He said that Kim should be a villain, not even a hero.
Oh, did he really? Too funny. So see, maybe she could get ruled out, and then but then I don't know who am I going to go up against next.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Denise, follow where we did on RHAP, the March Mad Dogness Best 32 winner bracket?
That I did not. So I listened to, I mean, I do, I know, I feel kind of guilty saying that, because I do, I listen to almost everything. I even listened to your Hunted one.
Oh, wow, did you like Hunted?
Your Hunted podcast, I did. I got sucked into it, and so I listened to kind of the final, I think it was your final Hunted podcast, and because I was like, I want to hear some of this stuff. So, No, I didn't.
Denise, well, you actually did very well on the March Mad Dogness bracket that you advanced, I believe, to the Great Eight, I think.
Well, fantastic. So any idea who I started up against?
Yes, I can tell you. Well, just to spoil spoiler alert. So you moved on past your first round matchup was against Tina Wesson. And the Survivor Supreme Court ruled in your favor. You moved on past Tina. And then in the matchup of, I think, was it Ethan versus Sophie? And ooh. I think it was, I don't remember who won that matchup. But then you beat whoever, I'm sorry, I have it wrong. So it was Earl versus Danny Boatwright. And Earl moved on. And then you moved on past Earl Cole.
Oh, okay. But we had to go back like a lot of seasons for me to do that. So
yeah.
So
you
I'm
did you
so
were
sure
you did move
said.
On to the Great Eight, but then unfortunately your nemesis Kim Spradlin knocked you out.
See, I think I don't think the odds are going to be in my favor, but it'll be fun to see. So yeah. So no, if anybody wants to jump on voting, you go for it. You know.
Yes.
So.
And if I recall correctly, only one person on the Survivor Supreme Court ruled in your favor over Kim Spradlin, but it was Dawn Meehan.
Oh, well, thank you, Dawn.
Yes.
Dawn
yes.
takes bread. She's
so,
awesome.
So tell her to vote for you over Kim.
I will. I'll rally the troops with Dawn. So come on. if you've got some connections, yeah. Let's do this. I think we've got until, I don't know when the next round goes, but we've got a few days, I think.
I'm up against Shane Powers as a villain, and I'm already, I was already nervous, and then that he found out about it, and then he was texting me about it the other day.
Oh, no. So what do you think your odds are?
Well, of living? Not good.
No.
So I'm telling people, vote for Shane. I want to live to see May.
That's awesome. I'll see if I can rally some on the other side for you.
Okay. All right. So I'm just taking a look. I love to check out what you're talking about on Facebook. You always put out some blogs during the season. Have you written anything yet this season?
You know, I did, but I haven't, you know, again, it's hard because I get, you know, just with life here and, you know, I've still been trying to put some things out, but I just put a couple of things out. I'm trying to think of, and now I got to get my computer up. I can't even think what I put out. I didn't put out anything today because I wanted to save it all for you.
Yes, well, I appreciate that.
Exactly. And like I said, I was feeling the pressure, but
what were you saying about Michaela and Debbie last week?
Oh, yeah, that's what it was. You know, and, you know, it's so, it's been fun to be able to have that Facebook page. I never thought I would really enjoy something like that much, but people get really involved on my page, and we'll go back and forth, and I'll try and answer, you know, as many people as I can, and, you know, there are a lot of differing opinions and everything. As long as we're not calling each other names, it's all good, and I think what I had just thought, you know, I commented a little bit about Brad's, kind of the shift in Brad's gameplay, but I had commented about Debbie and Michaela being kind of the goats that I thought, like, kind of that they could end up in that goat role for different reasons, you know, that, you know, from a social standpoint, they might be seen as somebody that someone might be really interested in taking to the end, but thinking that they just haven't made those, you know, solid connections to get those final votes in a final tribal council. I think that's what that one was about. I think. But I haven't. See, I lose track. I lose track past the week. I have no doubt, though, it looks like next week will give me something to write about. It looks like everybody's crying. And I know I read something about Jeff saying, you know, that Survivor being culturally relevant throughout, you know, all the years. So I'm curious about what's going to happen. But I'm sure it'll give me some fodder to blog something. So.
All right. Well, people should check that out. Look for the @DeniseStapley Survivor Philippines Facebook page. That's it's a mouthful.
It is. I had to. And then when I initially made the page, I'd spelled Philippines wrong. So this is the second page. Yes. Apparently being out there for 39 days doesn't help your spelling. So, yep, it's Denise Stapley Survivor Philippines. And, yep, I try to blog something or write a little something up there. Sometimes I put stuff up there that's just going on in kind of life in general. But most of the time I've tried to keep that Survivor Philippines page Survivor focused. So.
Okay. Denise, do you have a hashtag for today?
Oh, I'm horrible at vote often, vote early, vote often.
Which comes first?
Vote early. I think she said hashtag vote early, vote often.
Vote early, vote often.
Know.
What was she talking in reference
someone.
To?
I think she was saying about her extra vote. That's what she was. It was right after she got that advantage that she was referring it to. Or are you asking me what I'm referring it to?
No. I don't know what the context was because she didn't even vote.
It was on the boat. She was being interviewed after exile. And she was talking about kind of that having that extra vote guaranteed that at least one other person was voting in her favor or voting the way that she wanted. So she was just kind of offhandedly saying, so vote early, vote often.
Okay. Denise, I always appreciate it when you come on here. You're really one of the best at breaking this all down. You have a unique skill set to talk about the game. And I just want you to know how much I really appreciate this.
Well, thank you very much. I always enjoy it. I know, like you said, we don't get to do it all the time, but I do. I like to get ready for this, and it's fun. You don't get that chance all the time to really kind of talk about the game and really split it apart. So thanks for having me again.
Did we get to everything on your chart?
I did, and now I can shred them because they are a hot mess.
Yeah.
So I'll probably have to make a new one next week anyway. So.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go out and I'm going to get a Monster Energy drink tattoo right after this.
Fantastic. I don't know what mine would be. I have to think of, I'd have to do a coffee bean or something. I just drink way too much coffee. So that's my drug of choice these days. So.
I hear that. All right, Denise, thank you so much. And don't make me wait 3 more seasons before you come back.
I'll try. Hey, you talk to CBS for me. So
okay.
Maybe pass along a hello to Randy Bailey for me.
All right. You got it. All right. Take care, Denise.
Thanks, Rob. You bet. Bye.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Denise Stapley back here on the podcast, and really love getting Denise back on here, that nobody is able to everybody tries to psychoanalyze the contestants, but Denise is the only person that I actually trust what they're saying when they psychoanalyze all of these different Survivor players. So very nice to catch up with her. All right, so coming up next on the podcast, I am going to have our voicemail feedback show with Jessica Leese, the co-host of our Amazing Race wrap-up shows. Amazing Race came back last week, so I always like to get Jessica Leese on with me at the start of an Amazing Race season, so be on the lookout for that. And then plenty of other podcasts coming back around at the start of next week as we are rapidly approaching the merge of Survivor Game Changers. Of course, a big shout-out to all of our new patrons who have come on board through this season on patreon.com. Those are the people that help support the podcast with monthly contributions, and they get a bunch of great incentives for doing so. And of course, my undying appreciation. To find out more about the benefits of becoming an RHAP patron, go to robhasawebsite.com/patron for more information on that. And of course, even for people who are not a patron, thank you guys so much for using our links for amazon.com, robhasawebsite.com/amazon. It all does help keep the podcast moving. So thanks again to Denise and you guys for listening. Looking forward to hearing what you have to say in the comments, and we'll talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.